universe. Appreciate it. Let's open the door and find out who the co-host is today. Is that the, what door is that, Andrew? Is that the door with the dogs behind it?
Yeah.
I'm back! Oh, 2 weeks off.
You bet, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing harder than coming back from 2 weeks off.
By the way, did you keep up on the news?
Taking 2 weeks. I barely did.
Oh, good. Perfect. Got a big mouthful of it. Oh, that's nasty. By the way, you've gone and all hell broke loose. We now have workers' rights. We got rid of Kennedy. I mean, this has been, you need to go away for another 2 weeks. This is real. Every time story broke, I'm like, yes!
Yes. It was
freedom!
Like return to the dark ages freedom! That first week I was gone.
And then
Scott Pruitt left, kind of dampened your parade.
Okay, we'll throw him overboard. Okay, here we go. Carmen Best back in the running. If you're not up on the story, we've been covering this thing for like 48 hours now. Carmen Best, I'll tell you that friends of mine that are police officers absolutely love her. She's been in it for like 20-some years, 23 years or 26 years.
26, I think, yeah.
She was a beat cop.
Never worked anywhere else. It's entirely within the Seattle Police Department.
People love her. The union guys love her. Everybody loves Carmen Best. Her resume is a little thin as far as, like, she doesn't come from a big city and wasn't a former police chief and things like that.
That's right.
But as far as just getting along with everybody, everybody loves Carmen. She was called on her way to a Kenny Chesney concert on Saturday, which should also score points for her, because no one puts on a show like Kenny over at CenturyLink. Were you there? Were you there for that show?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I was abroad.
Were you on a holiday?
Yeah,
were you taking a holiday? You missed the program. Your schedule allowed you to take a holiday.
That's right.
God.
I was cheering on the French World Cup in Paris.
Okay. Nothing more obscure or unnecessary for this show. All right.
I got way more obscure. Austria. Now that's obscure. Cows clanging.
Okay. Let's stay focused on this right
okay.
now. We'll let you go on.
I was the one that misdirected the show.
Doing a movie review later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, here we go. This is Bishop Zachary Bruce. He's a senior pastor at the Freedom Church. Did we just hear from this guy? Did Ursula just play him?
Maybe a little bit.
All right, here we go. Here's some more. Here's 39 seconds saying that best is best.
We wanted Carmen, 1,000% for fairness and transparency in the selection process. We want the best person to lead our police department. Just because a person's from the outside doesn't make them shouldn't be a criteria for selection. And Seattle wants the best candidate. And all of that adds up to Carmen Best. I've never seen a person like her, honestly. I've never seen a police chief who is so warm and caring about communities. I've worked for 41 years in the community, and I've traveled to 44 states. I've never seen anyone like Carmen Best, ever. I mean that. I hope that's recorded. Yeah. That's true.
Was she fourth on the list? Is that what happened? They took the top three. She was number four. The number four drops off. They said to her, hey, how do you feel about it? She goes, listen, I'll do whatever they want me to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, no, there were five finalists. Then they came up with three semifinalists, and she didn't make the final three cut.
Okay.
When that happened, there were lots of protests, mostly from community activists that were protesting her because they know her. They feel like they can trust her. They have complete confidence in her, but also, interestingly enough, the union as well seemed to rally around Carmen Best and say, hey, what are you doing? Why do you think we need an outsider to help continue fixing the troubles that we have here? Carmen Best would be great. However, they continued with the process with those final three, and it looked like over the weekend, this is really interesting political machinations behind the scenes here. Mm-hmm. It looked like the front runner was the former police chief of Pittsburgh, who has a national reputation for being a reformer, but ran into a buzzsaw of a union in Pittsburgh and resigned after 2 years because of the clash there. He was seen as the front runner. Over the weekend, the mayor, according to this article with three sources from the Seattle Times, said that the mayor's office kind of worked with this guy who was now the front runner and to say, you know what, if you really believe in police reform, how about you work with us make sure the police reform is complete, but not as police chief.
Uh-huh.
We'll get you as the mayor's advisor, because at this point, they don't have an advisor on police reform, and yeah. So that was an administrative position that was open, and that would open the way for Carmen Best, who not only is now included, she's now considered, again, according to sources with the Seattle Times, she's now considered the front runner. Yeah. Not that it's a done deal, but that she's now considered a front runner.
Okay.
It's an interesting political move on the mayor's part.
Well, maybe, just speculation, maybe they look at Carmen Best's resume and her experience, that, you know, bring somebody in like this, McLay, is that his name?
Yeah.
Bring Cameron. Him in and let him handle some of that other stuff while she does the other things. They'll work in concert. Maybe because she doesn't have as much experience as what this McLay guy does. The union basically did a no-confidence vote. Everybody wiped him out. Only 22 people that could have possibly voted yes for the guys for confidence voted. They abstained from any votes.
Where?
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah, okay.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
he spoke at the DNC.
Yeah.
He wore the uniform of the police. And everybody's like, what the hell are you doing speaking at the DNC?
Not
Hillary
everybody.
Clinton. No, well,
I mean,
the unions hated it. Why are you standing up as a police officer in uniform? He says it's not political. Well, the hell it's not political.
Well, no,
you're speaking at the DNC.
Okay,
also, I also read one other thing. He gave them the speech, and they made huge edits in it, and they wanted him to talk more about Hillary. He didn't do it. I watched the speech. Did you watch it?
I did at the time.
And they didn't pay any attention to him. The people are talking. He might have been on it at 11 in the
morning.
That's
the way conventions are.
I know.
But to be fair, the Milwaukee police chief, who is very right-wing, spoke at the RNC. So this is not like that extraordinary.
Well, when you're a union guy and you probably voted against Hillary and you're in Pittsburgh, all of a sudden your guy, your chief, is standing up there at a political rally promoting your opponent.
You're promoting police reform, which is what he's known for. He has this national reputation for police reform. And so the idea is you're bringing in a guy with that kind of national reputation to sort of finish the deal. Again, the Seattle Times did some good reporting here, I think. They said that one of the reservations they had about Carmen Best, in addition to her inexperience at the police chief level, that would be the one knock against her, we thought was that there also were concerns that she was maybe too tied to the history of the department itself and the culture of the department to do that final, you know, the final, you know, go through. Mm-hmm. That what's happening at this point now is that we have gotten approval, that we've done enough to meet the demands of the Justice Department. However, the judge is saying that now you have to make sure that it's institutionalized, and for the next 2 years, we're sort of like on the ropes for that.
Right.
They thought it might be harder for Best to pull that off. And this is one thing that I didn't realize, again, until the Seattle Times. They also thought that Best was maybe too friendly with Police Sergeant Rich O'Neill, who I think we all remember. He used to run the Union Guild, and he's sort of seen as a polarizing figure.
Uh-huh.
But the key is he was a part of the contentious negotiations with the city of Seattle because they haven't been working under contract since 2014. They thought that might be problematic. Those are some of the reservations. But they thought that Carmen Best did such a classy job of handling her rejection.
Yes.
They said, you know what? Maybe we should reconsider. And right now, she's leading the pack.
More from Bruce. Bishop Zachary Bruce.
We're full of joy. We're happy. We're excited 1,000% for Carmen Best because of her heart. We want to make sure that this process is very fair and very transparent going forward. And all the issues that happened before, they're still being addressed. But going forward, we're going to be watching very intensely what happens.
It'll be nice if Carmen gets a job. It'd be a shame for her. There would be very few police officers that she can actually work with because most of them are quitting. You missed that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most.
Jason Rance had that one. Yeah. They're leaving in droves, Tom.
Yeah.
Mass exodus. Mass exodus.
So maybe they won't if she stays.
Yeah, right.
But now by most, that seems like an inaccurate statement.
All right. Well, they're going to Tacoma and they're heading
to
Olympia.
Right. But not most, right?
Well, you're
going to. How many thousand? How many, police officers do we have? How many thousands of police officers?
I know
most.
Six. You have to look at the demographics and you say, okay, how many of those guys are 54 years old? How many are they going to start to retire out? So of those, they leave, right? And then the younger ones that are coming up, how many of them stay? It's something that Seattle will have to deal with because, you'd rather work in a city that pays you more and respects you more. right?
Well, I think that's true. And right now they have more respect. The attitude toward cops right now is higher than it's been in the last few years.
According to who?
Because of these reforms.
According to who?
According to the
surveys.
Talk to a cop. According to the surveys of citizens in Seattle, we're proud of our department.
It's not the citizens.
It is the citizens who are proud of their police department.
It's the office of whatever the name of that office is that brings them in and beats them up for doing their job.
Police accountability. Accountability is not beating up.
BS. And then you get the mayor, you get city council members, and you get this constant drumbeat that these guys are nothing more than a bunch of rogue racists, or they're out to get people. Yeah,
the leadership in the police department felt that way. They were brought in to deal with that. Kathleen O'Toole, okay, who you claim was loved by the majority of police officers, she was part of the reform. She was also known as a reformist. And now the image of Seattle police has become that they are one of the leading waves of police reform. They're seen as an example. Feeling good about things.
Right. Yeah, that's Holder and Merrick Bob and those people coming in saying, you guys are a bunch of racists. We're going to clean this place up.
Not a bunch of racists, but they do say that there was biased policing. And they're now trying to institutionalize its correction.
I guess people will vote with their feet, and they will determine whether they want to work there or not. And we'll see how the story shakes out come September, October, even though they took our way our producer, Patrick, to try to become a police officer.
Yes, who will be
interesting to see if Patrick wants to stay in there. We'll use him as a guinea pig, and of course he can speak to us off the record, and then we'll act like we don't know it's him when we talk about him on the air.
What are you going to call him? Seat?
Just something. We'll come up with another name. Let's say it's tonight. Is it this afternoon? What time is it?
6 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going to move
our time.
Move the Supreme Court even more to the right. Freedom!
Republicans are holding 4 lottery tickets, and all of them are winners. If you're a conservative Republican, the 4 people named, particularly Thomas Heidemann, I'm glad he's on the list, are all winners, and every Republican should embrace these picks.
That's your Lindsey Graham right there. Very excited. Graham doesn't expect to get any support from any Democrats. No kidding.
Here's the truth.
No.
Donald Trump could nominate George Washington or John Marshall, and they couldn't get through. Maybe a handful of Democrats will vote for a Trump pick because they have to politically. I've never seen it this dysfunctional. There's nobody that President Trump could nominate from a conservative vent that will get many Democratic votes. But this is a nightmare for red state Democrats to oppose a highly qualified nominee. And all 4 of these people are highly qualified, been on the court, know what they're doing.
Yeah, all right. They're going to bring him in. Whoever who gets the nod, of the 4, they don't know who's ahead. They have no indication as who they're.
You know, it's interesting because it could be a nice switcheroo. Last time out, Neil Gorsuch was considered the second choice. It was Hardiman who was considered the first choice. That got all the buzz, and then they kind of, they surprised us and gave us Gorsuch. Hardiman is now among the 4 being considered, 3 men and 1 woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the intro to that clip is the only thing that I would object to. I think there are 4 to 6 red state Democrats who seriously could imagine voting for whoever is the nominee, including Doug Jones, the conservative Democrat who was just elected in Alabama to knock off Trump's pick. He's already said, I'm not a no or I'm not a yes. I'm going to wait and see. But there are a lot of red state Democrats that are going to have a tough time politically with this, just like the 2 women senators from Alaska, Murkowski and Collins from Maine, that might go the other way.
Those are the only 2, because McCain will not be there because McCain is too sick to vote. So you're going to get – it's those 2. Those 2 are the ones. So whoever they bring up there, and then they do the whole dog and pony show, how do you feel about Roe v. Wade? And they're asking the question. They are trained to avoid those answers, right? They know what they're supposed to. So then you take up past things that they've said, and then you bring that forward. Murkowski and Collins will then – be able to go, you know what, it seems like they're not going to go after Roe v. Wade, so I'm gonna vote for him, whoever it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see what the women vote, but the point is that even those, if the 2 female GOP senators vote against the nominee, there are more Democrats, between 6 and 8, I think, Democrats that could vote in favor, so that it's still, the power is all in the hands of the Republicans.
Oh, well, that's the way it should be. Oh, this is an opportunity.
It's terrible
we only
what they
have
did
two,
to Merrick Garland.
We only have 3
Merrick Garland, that name should haunt you, John.
No, you know who should haunt you? Is Harry Reid.
we're going to get rid of the supermajority 60 vote, and we're going to pass this.
But not,
so look out, Harry Reid, because yes, just as Mitch McConnell said, one day you will regret this,
that's
and
right,
this day will come sooner than before. And now
forget,
all we need is a simple majority. Yes. Thank you, Harry Reid.
Because we did not need a simple majority for anything. The only thing the Democrats changed were the lower courts,
right,
because the Republicans were doing exactly the same thing that Lindsey Graham is,
yes,
now accusing the Democrats are, which is just objecting to any, at any level of the judgeships. They would not let anybody through. So they said, this is ridiculous. We have no court system working in this country. Then the Republicans came in and Mitch McConnell said, okay, I'm going to raise the ante. Now we're going to make it to the Supreme Court.
Yep, that's right.
Level, because that was not what the Democrats did.
They started it.
They started it. A good one.
Chris Coons, Senator, says,
there's precious little that we procedurally can do.
Talking about Democrats.
If the Republicans are willing to change the rules of the Senate, as they demonstrated they are, mm-hmm, in changing the majority threshold required, at the fight over now Justice Gorsuch, they changed the rules on filibuster margins. We could pull something that would last a day or two. But if they're willing to change the rules, there's very little we can do with just 49 members that would prevent them from moving ahead with a confirmation.
Elections.
It's true.
That's the problem.
Power play.
Shouldn't have run Hillary. We're going to get to the story as we beat up on Denmark.
You shouldn't have run Trump either.
Hey, look who we got in the court.
That's the evangelicals' bargain with the devil. And
right,
it's,
said, yeah.
And that's what they said. Okay, we're going to take, he is a corrupt sort of image of God's work. That's
right,
sort of how they've
well,
seen
him. Well, he's a fallen. We're all sinners, Tom.
Yes, but he keeps sinning.
Listen, that. But as long as you ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, that's right.
On so the way out of the confession booth, don't be afraid to mug an old lady.
Sorry, Melania, and sorry, God. Okay, good, I'm in.
I'm back in. But then you fall again. Yeah. But then through the grace of God, Tom,
yeah,
you are able to seek redemption. And then, again, we're all fallible. Some foul more than others. We're gonna have to save. We have to save this story because I saw this in the New York. Was this New York Times? This popped up on Sunday morning, and I was like, "Oh, this is sweet." So we get a chance to dump on Denmark. In fact, Andrew, you and I.
No,
were
I thought you praised Denmark. You
No.
Oh.
When you weren't here, I went after Denmark. Oh yeah, we went after all those nations, the whole Denmark and
NATO.
Yeah.
All those terrible Europeans would bring on North Korea and Russia. They're our best friends.
Let me tell you something. If this story broke in the United States that they were doing this in quote-unquote urban ghettos, you would be up in arms. So you're going to have to defend your beloved Denmark.
Yes.
We're going to dump on it, Tom.
Yeah. No, but you're going to praise it because they are being awful.
No. I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you try to defend it. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You know what else I'm going to do? I could have my head in a great big jar, and I would be perfectly content. That's a quote from you, by the way.
Yeah, I could have sworn that was your voice.
No, but that was me. But no, here's your voice. Here you. By the way, this got a lot of play when you weren't here.
I love my body, and I get a lot of pleasure out of my body.
You should also know something else that happened.
But
I accidentally told a story. Not accidentally. I intentionally told a story that involved the word urinate. And now it has started an entire sort of subculture of people that are writing to us trying to get the word urine on the air. It's out of control, Tom.
Yeah, that's why I'm your co-host. to prevent that.
No, it's too late. It's too late. We'll come right back. What if Amazon were to unionize? What would it mean to all of you? We'll be right back. Welcome back, Keel Mortgage. That's right, Keel Mortgage, 1 week off, and hardly anybody called them at 1-888-778-KIEL. So they came rushing back, tail between their legs. I don't think so. They don't even need to do that. They just know that they took 1 week off because, Tom, you took a week off.
Yeah, that's right. They were in Europe with me.
Yes, and not as many people were listening to the show, I'm going to be honest with you. And it wasn't because of you. It was just because it was the holiday.
Because it was Keel Mortgage.
People, you know, cashing in on, oh, it's 4th of July, and then why should I bother coming in on Wednesday? People took the whole week off. And then if people here come in the day after 4th of July and no one seems embarrassed, I walk around, I try to shame them.
Why would they be shamed?
Because I worked here.
Oh,
I worked.
Worked.
Jacob worked. Right. Andrew worked. And everybody else walks in like they didn't do anything wrong on July 5th. All right. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL.
We just celebrate our nation's birthday.
I'm in the middle of a spot. K-I-E-L-L. Did I spell it right? Can't interrupt me. Andrew, how do I spell it?
You spelled it with two L's instead of one.
Tom threw me off. One triple H.
And is it E before I
you
or I before E?
You have in the middle
e.
of a spot.
This is the most the endless
CO53969. All righty. Amazon warehouse workers. Apparently it is hard. How long do they give you to go to the bathroom? 5 minutes?
6 minutes tops.
Okay. The nuns used to give us 13 seconds to do God's natural business. That's what they called it.
13
Louis, I won't say his last name, but it rhymes with Malone, went into the bathroom. Oops, it actually is Malone.
That's not rhyming.
Sounds, that like, a homonym? Like sounds exactly like.
Yes.
When he got caught doing something not God's natural business in the bathroom. So then at that point, the nuns came in and stood next to the urinals, the line of urinals, and would clap to 13. And
count you had
to
down?
Do, no, not count down, count up. And you had to be doing God's natural business. They thought it took 13 seconds for that. Okay, so that is.
Dory would never have survived that. You know, he's bladder shy.
I know.
Shy.
I know.
If you have a nun clapping your hands.
Natural business, boys. One,
that's
two.
Not natural, nuns.
Okay. I'm in the middle of a spot.
Yeah.
Oh, 1-888-778.
It's called the Tom and Curly Show.
All right. Anyway, so Amazon gives you 5 minutes, and people are like, hey, you know what? It's hard to work there. It's just an awful place to work. And if we were to unionize, things would be so much better for all of us.
Interestingly enough, the business columnist at the Seattle Times, I think that's what John Talton, what he suggests here is that just like we needed unions back in the day in the 18th and 19th century to mm-hmm. create sort of established work orders like the end of child labor and 8-hour work days and higher wages and all this, maybe what we need to do in this country he's primarily focusing on the fulfillment center workers mm-hmm. at Amazon who are not benefiting like the 50,000 new employees that are going to be making $100,000 or more or something like that. Uh-huh. He says these guys are just – this is in effect, and he quotes one commentator, Seattle, a tech boom town built on 21st century slave labor. He just talks about maybe this is where the union would be helpful to establish certain parameters. Mm-hmm. He says right now the unions have gotten a bad rap. Some of their own making. He acknowledges that there has been corruption, all this, but in general, what they did is they established a baseline to which all employers now sort of accommodate and accept. And if it hadn't been for the unions, we wouldn't have things like the child labor laws and the 8-hour workday. So he says, so maybe something like that can happen at these fulfillment centers. But he then acknowledges, as soon as he says that, we are in an impossible situation politically for unions.
Yeah.
That there are now, it's now down to something like 6% of employees in the United States are members of unions. And he goes, and he mentions, by the way, in the 50s, when everyone thinks America was great again, we had 30% participation in a union.
Right.
So,
well, we had just come out of the war.
Good thing.
Right. So we just come out of the war and we had decimated the enemies, decimated our trading partners. So then we needed to be able to, we basically ruled the world. And all of those wages and all of the power of those unions was built on the fact that Europe was in rubble. So the numbers inflated in the 1950s and then continued to the 1970s. And then unions began to lose their power as inflation ran rampant. So they made money more expensive. So then manufacturing fled the United States and went to Asia.
Well,
and
yeah,
that's the beginning. Globally,
yeah,
that's
globalism.
The beginning of the end of unionism. But it's interesting,
yes.
Tom. Pew did a survey. 55% of Americans have a favorable view of unions.
Yes, and higher than they do of corporations,
right.
Which is not reflected in our political makeup, which is very anti-union, as Talton points out in his article, that right now, because we have a corporate favoring Supreme Court and Republicans holding a lock in Congress and with the presidency, that this is not going to happen, that unions now are. And I'm just sort of surprised there's anybody even calling for unions because they've been so bashed in the political world. And he says, actually, unions are more popular than you'd expect.
Only in France, only 10% of the people in France are part of a union, but they have a strong collective bargaining. So the idea is that maybe because as soon as Amazon gets any whiff that anybody's thinking about creating a union, they get in there and stop that sort of stuff. Maybe a collective bargaining where you could get people to come to Amazon and say, hey, can we have air conditioning? Would it be possible to allow us to have 7 minutes to go to the bathroom? Maybe we move our bowels once a week or something like that. And they come up with some sort of agreements that way. It works in Europe. The union is not strong in Europe, but the collective bargaining is sort of a, I guess, the sort of ugly stepchild of or step brother or sister of a union for the Amazon.
The thing
workers.
Is, I mean, that's what, but collective, you know, a collective action is what unions are about.
Right. But then sort of confine them so that you don't get into additional breaks and this and that and somebody can't do this. Just let them work on, right, but really control them so you don't really have, you're not, what unions end up doing is they protect the weakest and the laziest of everyone.
Well, I think that's an unfair smear, but it is true. There's some of that going on when you have a collective action, you're going to have to collectively protect everybody, and so the ones that get the most attention may be the weakest.
Are the ones that do the least amount of work, yeah.
Well, maybe so, but the idea is that it's good for the rest of these.
Why did 94% of workers reject unions when given an opportunity?
No, they didn't reject. 94% of people didn't reject. Yes, but that is for political forces. His argument here is that you've got, you know, we're about to even cement it further, a right-wing Supreme Court that is anti-corporate and the power of Republican politics to do this, that it's, there's no movement in that direction. And he says that it was a corrective. Here's what he's suggesting historically, that unions were a corrective to the abuses of the businesses or the corporations. Mm-hmm. And he says, and then they sort of won the day. Unions, in effect, won the day. They got their minimums of child labor laws and the eight-hour workday and vacation and so those kinds of things. And then, so everyone said, oh, heck, we don't need unions anymore because everybody already does that. Now the pendulum has swung, he's suggesting, the other way, perhaps with the globalization, he points out, and automation, two things that are that are really hurting unions. Those are the big bugaboos. But he says maybe we need a correction the other way. He sees unions as a great counterbalance to corporations. Mm-hmm. And it's both major institutions can get corrupt or get abusive, and so you have both of them to kind of balance each other. Right now, he says the balance is out of whack.
The unions didn't like child labor because they didn't like competing against kids that would work for cheaper.
Well, yes, but it also dovetailed nicely with this idea that we shouldn't make 6-year-olds work.
Let's split the difference. An 11-year-old wants to go in there and do the job for 50 cents. Yeah. And then some 30-year-old guy comes along and says, well, I'm not going to work for 50 cents. I can't compete against this kid.
Yeah.
So let's get the kids out of there. And where are all those 11-year-olds now?
In the poorhouse.
Exactly. That's where they are. Starbucks says they're going to get rid of this. This is the Starbucks. A Starbucks employee. I guess the woman was unable to use the bathroom. That's the only way to explain what she was doing out on the sidewalk. Right back. They better close down Starbucks for this. All right, big announcement, Tom. We're adding a new way to get in touch with us here at the Tom and Curly Show. It's the mailbag contest. Don't forget your letters that you enter into the drawing for a $100 service department gift card from Doug's Lingwood Mazda, proud sponsor of the Tom and Curly Show mailbag. The contest and rules are at mynorthwest.com/win and the Tom and Curly Show page. I have no idea what this means.
So you can email in or mail in the normal ways, or you can also go to the Facebook page. There's a place to email there, or also at mynorthwest.com/win.
Okay.
So there are four ways now to get a hold of us, and two of them will enter you into this contest.
Correct.
You have to go to the Facebook page to get entered into this contest.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, there you
go. Who wrote this?
I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. I don't know where it came from, John.
Just initials.
Yes.
Initials. Give me some initials.
There might be a J in there.
Oh, all right. All righty. Let's see. Starbucks adds a new service and now to their business. Of course, they get you the caramel macalottes and the double tall skin and minigers.
What the heck is that?
Skin and jiggers and all sorts of stuff. At 1 o'clock in the morning. They have another service that they offer.
This is an amazing story.
From Cairo 7.
Video shows the moments after Rochelle Reams helped bring a baby girl into the world.
By the way, when you start a radio segment with video shows, you've already put the listener behind the eight ball.
It all seems kind of like a dream.
Reams was working at this Starbucks off South 72nd Street around 1 a.m. Friday morning when a man knocked on the window.
And he said, she's laying on the ground, about to have a baby.
Reams immediately jumped into action. She grabbed towels and ran out to this grassy slope right outside the store.
The lady was laying right here, so I got the towels from her on this side.
Seconds later, the baby was out.
She said that she needed her pants off.
I need my pants off.
So,
doing the man and the woman now.
Yeah, doing both. Do both parts.
I took those off for her, and I noticed that the baby was crowning.
I'm doing the baby.
That's not what crowning sounds like, Jeff.
So I...
That was the mother.
I asked her to lift up her hips so I could put the towels under...
Please lift up your hips so I can put the towels under them.
...underneath her hips. And as soon as she lifted up her hips, the baby came right out.
Paramedics showed up shortly after. Video shows other strangers also stopped to help. Reams, a mother of two, says she relied on her instincts that morning.
When you're a mom, you kind of go back to those moments when your babies were born. There was no really fear. It was just mainly just like, this needs to be done, and she needs help.
Later that day, Reams visited the mom at Tacoma General Hospital.
This is the best part of the story, right?
She says mom and baby appear to be doing well.
It's an honor that I could be there.
Isn't that sweet that she goes to the hospital to see her? That's
yes.
Good. Happy ending, everybody happy.
This is. However, there is one little wrinkle. I thought you thought this was going to be in the story. Reams also said that she broke store policy when she left the store to help.
Uh-oh.
And so the question is, because Starbucks is always in the news, and it feels right. Like, oh, are they going to go after this employee? But luckily, Starbucks says, no, wonderful, wonderful job. That breaking store policy to deliver a baby is something to approve of, especially at 1 in the morning. I think that's, they don't identify who the man is who knocked on the
I did imitation
door. I know.
I was going to add in there, when other strangers came to help, I was going to do, hey, can I help in any way? I was going to do another voice. I thought that would be too much for everybody. And I don't want to be showing off with my million voices.
At least not without videotape. that's an amazing story, though, that she helped deliver a baby and someone would actually be in a situation where they would be on the sidewalk outside Starbucks at 1 in the morning.
It just goes to show you that I know a lot of people that have had childbirth done, you know, naturally, either at home or in a hot tub or somebody's hot tub at their home. So often people say, you don't need to go to a hospital.
Yeah.
If you don't have to, it's not a medical procedure. It is a natural thing that you can do on a sidewalk at 1 o'clock in the morning in front of Starbucks.
The thing is, you need a hospital if there are complications.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the problem.
Right, not even Starbucks could help you with that. We'll come right back. Tom and Curly Show right here on Cairo Radio. A lot of other news to get to. Don't go anywhere. Tom's back. 2 weeks of vacation.